Hey everyone, welcome. We are doing training call number two. You guys got your handouts? Yes, for those that do the handouts. Just a note again for all those here live and those on the recording, handouts are not mandatory, but I like them because you can follow along. It's visual. The writing process, I always, when I was young, found that I could learn when I wrote. It kind of solidified things. But of course, there are two handouts, one with fill in the blank and one with answers. So you can choose whichever you wish. And before we get in to the content, let's just take a moment or a few to practice some of the things you've been learning. And maybe just for some interaction, and so I can see, and I'll mention this to the people in the recording because they won't see the chat. What is the top lesson neurosensory exercise that you keep coming back to? And this could be for the alumni or for the newbies. So let me know. And of course, for the newbies, we're into just the beginning of the third week. Orienting is winning. Following impulse, potent posture. Of course, for some of the alum, kidney adrenals, diaphragms, grounding. Ah, kidney adrenals with Epsom salts bath. That's a good one. For those, we will get into kidney adrenals very soon. Orienting. I think orienting's winning. And thank you, everyone. Interoception, layers, seven steps. Thanks, everyone. Joints is this week. So you'll get into the joints lesson. That's lab three. Kidney adrenals is lab four. So thank you, everyone. So today we're going to get into building capacity and somatic first aid. So before we dive into that, let's just practice some of these basics. So if you are staring at your computer screen, that's fine. And if it feels okay, let the attention, let your gaze, and I'll play along with everyone, move to somewhere else. Mine is going to move to my glass of water. So really put into practice orienting. This essential step in reconnecting with our environment. And bake into that, or I should say blend into that, impulse following. Do you have to move? You need to scratch an itch. You need to move your arms. Have you been sitting all day? I haven't, but I always like to stretch when I can and move a little bit. Notice your breath. How is that coming in? Is your mouth closed, open? Is there clear airways through your nose? Is there any congestion? Is it a bit of both? And what about that ground under you? Where is it? Dropping into that sensory contact. Because not only does our autonomic nervous system and the peripheral nervous system that is above it connect to all of our digestion and our survival, it also gives us that sensory motor. So right now I've got one hand that's a little cooler, right? So it also lets us feel temperature, pressure. our sense of self in space. Am I too far forward? Am I too far back? This is that potent posture. Am I kind of hunched over to the left, or am I hunched over to the right? When we're very much disconnected from our body, we might not know that we have this habit of always living on one sit bone. Yeah. And so, as simple as it is, part of getting more attuned to your body and these sensory receptors is it allows us to self-correct. I'd be curious to know, even within just the first few weeks of us being together, are you noticing that you're starting to find yourself holding? Are you noticing that you're finding yourself clenching? And let me know in the chat. Are you being aware of strange patterns that you never realized you have had? And for some, it might be yes. We've got lots of yeses. Yeah, clenching my fist, someone said. Lots of bracing, jaw, breath. So grinding my teeth, curling my toes, shoulders. One of my teachers used to say, are you wearing your shoulders for earrings? Right? So you bring your shoulders up. Okay, thanks everyone. Thank you. So this, as simple as this is gold. This is medicine. Because if you can start to self-notice, have self-awareness of these things, that's where you start to shift them. That's where you start to actively, with the higher brain thinking and with ease, notice, ah, I'm tensing. Now here's my second part to that question, 2A, we'll call it. For those that are noticing, when you notice, are you kind to yourself or do you beat yourself up a little bit? I saw a little chuckle there from a few, right? So this is another thing that you'll have to watch. How is your self-talk when you find these things? Can you correct yourself the way you would want to correct a young child who's learning how to tie their shoelaces? Not with venom and anger and stress, but just let's just try that again. Let's take a break. How about this way? So yeah, some people have said mixed, more curious, more kind, collapse. I get mad at myself and there's a little fight energy towards the tension. So this is also an important layer to notice as you start to notice these patterns. This is where the word curiosity can actually be really useful. I find that we sometimes overuse that word, but this is where, oh, isn't that curious or isn't that interesting that I just got mad at myself for clenching my jaw? Where does that come from? Yeah. And it gets easier. All right. Thank you, everyone. All right. Let's get into page one. So quick points, just a bit of review. So there's importance of the biology of stress videos. These are the five training videos that we'll get through within the end of week four, lab four. So the first thing there, education is key. Key is the word. Now, last week, we talked about the swimming pool and beach ball analogy at length. And so this is just a quick review. But first of all, as I said, education is key. And the reason why it's key is there's so much diversity and nuance and difference and uniqueness and all the words that you could possibly try to figure out and bring up to describe how we're all so different. Even two kids who were raised by the same parents in the same house, heck, even twins, there will be differences in them. How they see the world, how they interact with the world. And so when we're trying to figure out, why do I have this symptom or why do I have this pattern? And if it doesn't make sense, having the education, understanding these survival mechanisms makes so much of the difference because we realize that this strange way of seeing the world isn't strange at all. It's just one of our adaptation strategies, for example, or it's an actual trauma response, or it's just our quirkiness we're just unique with certain things, right? And so that's where the education is so important. So the next line down, we want to continue to create more exit paths and expanding space in the nervous system and body system. So this comes back to capacity. So we want to grow the pool. That's the next word, grow the pool. The body capacity. The basics like orienting, connecting to the ground, noticing, I'm holding my breath. That's stopping our capacity from being big. So just the act of being aware and shifting a tiny bit grows our capacity, or it keeps it from getting smaller. There's two ways of looking at it. That glass, what is it? Glass half full, half empty way of looking at things. So growing capacity is key. And it's actually what we focus on the most in SBSM is growing capacity and foundation. And then the next line down, take out the balls. It's like taking out the trash. So the balls represent the stressors, the old traumas, it could even be the thoughts that we have, the self-talk. Because even with that little bit of negative self-talk, that self-defeating, self-deprecating self-talk, that adds a hit of stress to the system. There's a little, neurological, biochemical hit of stress response. So sometimes it's not so much about taking out the balls, but it is. It's about not letting more come in. Kind of diverting. Right? Diverting. We live somewhere, Seth and I, where there's a lot of water. We're kind of in a rainforest. And you start to realize how the old owners here didn't properly put drainage in. And so all these pools, right? So we're learning how to, with the help of our gut people, divert the water so it doesn't pool. It doesn't land, on our driveway that turns into a sheet of ice in the winter. That's just an idea of how we need to create different pathways to move these sensations that maybe not so much are negative, but, it's too much for me to feel this sensation right now. I'm going to move my attention to a resource so I don't get stressed about this sensation that's too much. We'll get into that today. Okay, take out the balls. Don't let the acute stress stick. This is the same bullet point. Release old stored procedural memories. That is the word, procedural memories. So these are the old fight, flight responses that are stuck. That part of you that never got to shout, to scream, to run, to hit, to cover your eyes, to cry, to laugh. It's not all the ones that are what we would consider quote unquote negative. It's also holding back joy, right? Has anybody here ever done that where they're so excited about something and they want to just scream from the rooftops and you just keep your decorum, right? You keep yourself even keel, right? One could say that that comes from our upbringing where we weren't allowed to be the exuberant, silly little humans that we were. And one thing you might find as you start to move through this is you start being kind of weird and silly, and you start saying things that just sound totally gobbledygook, or you do little things that just come out of the blue, and really listen to those impulses. And granted, of course, it's safe to do so. You might not want to confront a stranger at the supermarket and start doing a dance with them, or maybe you will. Maybe they want to join with you. But there's these times when you're in your home, when you're in an environment that's fairly safe, that you just feel this need to move. All removal of these balls, of these trauma responses, held, stored procedural memories aren't just about crying and shaking or being angry. they can also be these joyful, playful things that we had to keep inside of us because mama and papa didn't know how to meet us. I hope that makes sense. They didn't know how to attune to our exuberance and our childlike energy. Next line down. It's not, that's the word, important to process every single event. Every single event. It's not important to process every single event that has occurred to us. That would be impossible to remember. And so this is where, in many ways, when we start to move these balls out and we grow capacity, we may be working on what one might call the archetype of how we always suppressed our anger, or the archetype of how we kept ourselves from being exuberant, silly little kiddos, right? And so sometimes these things shift in chunks, not just it was that day on the playground that I didn't get to do this, or it was this day at home when I wasn't able to cry when XYZ happened. Sometimes it's just this general sense of, wow, this stuff really wasn't allowed to come out, and now it's coming out. Next line down, biological embodiment, learning how to listen to the body's signals, listen. That's the awareness. That's that self-awareness. And if I add one more piece to this, you're learning how to listen to your interoception. Your interoception. All right. So the next few sections are probably, in my opinion, simplest but most important. So I've called this how to practice somatic first aid, quote unquote. So as we know, general first aid, you know, who's done first aid training here, or CPR, you know, the airway, heart, circulation. But what's one of the first things when you do first aid, when you go to a scene, before you even touch someone? Assess for danger, right? You don't want to jump into a scene where there's maybe a risk. Assess for danger, you know, there's no cars coming, there's no electricity lines, safety first, exactly. So that in some ways comes into our work as well, in a different kind of way. So if you look through the pages, page two, just going to pop ahead here, I have something called the four whens. And these four whens will dive into when we might resource, when we might not, when we might orient, when we might not, when we might take a deep breath, when we might not. So these are things that you will learn trial and error as you go forward. And so I'm going to give you a smorgasbord of concepts for you to then play with as we move forward. But the first line here, back to page one, how to practice somatic first aid. So I have a prompt here for the page. Write down four things that you can do when a minor, I'm very clear here, minor, not life-harming, so that's the word, or word with hyphen, life-harming event or stress takes place. So what are some things, four things, that you can do when a minor, not life-harming event or stress takes place? So the first one I have, and this is not in order of importance, by the way, I have is orient. So I'll use this as an example with myself. So let's say I fall down the stairs, heaven forbid. I've not done that ever, but I know this happens, right? So I fall down the stairs. In some ways, the orienting may come first, it may come last. Okay, so we'll just use me as an example and I'll piece this together. So orienting might be one of them. The next one, connect to the ground. So there's a chuckle I feel because of course you're connected to the ground, you just fell down the stairs, right? Gravity is going to take you. So it's possible in this example I just used that it's actually the ground that you're going to feel first, right? You've just fallen, boom. Next one down, notice the breath. Notice the breath. Next one down, follow impulse. So, you know, if I was really artistic in this handout, we'd have orienting, connecting to the ground, noticing breath, following impulse. We might even have let out emotions, kind of in a big super circle, like a mind map. Because sometimes these things all happen at the same time. Now, I'm going to take this example one step further. Who here remembers having an accident like this, either recently as an adult or when you were young, and you had someone with you who negated what just occurred, and they're like, come on, let's go. This is very classic for kiddos. You know, they fall off, my other example, they fall off of a bike, they've scraped their knee, mama or papa's there or whomever is there, and they're like, come on, you're fine, get back up. You know, this idea of get back on. If you don't get back on, you're not going to learn. What happens in that situation is if we don't allow ourselves to orient, feel, notice breath, follow impulse, which might be to cry, to let out a yelp or a scream. If we go back up to the top of the page, what's that trapping inside of us? Stress. It's trapping in the heat of the accident, the cry, all the things. So in a good scenario, if we paint this good scenario, we would, if we were to fall, whether it's me down the stairs or us when we were little, we would want to stay there and feel. Now, this comes back to not life harming. So there's context here. If you fall on the street in downtown Manhattan because you tripped over something and you're on the road and there's cars coming, clearly do not stay there and feel. Get the heck off, right? Now, of course, if you fall and you're unconscious, that's a whole other story. But let's just say you're conscious. Don't worry about processing. Get out, right? Get off. But then when you're in a safe space, again, maybe you've scraped your knee. When you scrape your knee, it stings, it hurts. Feel the sting, feel the burning. Usually there's a burning feeling. This is where noticing your interoception. Oh my goodness, I'm holding my breath. That's the shock response, bracing for more things to happen. This is where you feel the ground. This is where you feel and sense, and you might notice, I think I'm going to cry, or it just comes out. And then slowly over time, and if you have kids and you work with them and you let them go through this natural process, they will naturally go through these processes. They'll maybe have a yelp. They'll maybe get mad. They might, you know, start that wailing. And if you just stay close to them, you don't interfere, you just say, I'm here, they will eventually start to naturally orient. And then they'll reach for you. But if you try, has anybody tried this where you try to interfere with a kid or even an adult when they're in a big process? What sometimes happens? They'll push you away. Get away from me. I don't want to be touched. Right? So they know often, this is what I have to feel. Please don't interfere. And this is where, say, as the parent or the caregiver in this somatic first aid situation where it is not a life-harming, threatening event, you give them all the time they need. For you as an adult, yeah, someone just said they get angry with you, right? They get angry with you. So they know. They're like, just don't. You know, leave me alone. I need to feel this pain because it is painful. So if we go one more piece into that, when we have a sting of a scraped knee and where it hurts, and for someone to say, oh, that doesn't hurt, you're fine, That's the first insult of you as that child disconnecting from your body. And because the adult is the big person and the one who's supposed to teach us, we go, well, I guess I must be fine, even though I'm not. And if the parent does that once, it's going to happen over and over and over again. And many of us probably had this, right? Many of us probably had this. And so, as someone said, can we work with this emotional pain? Yes. So this is where, in this day forward, if we all took a pledge with both hands, right? Whenever you have a little burn, a little cut, you scrape your knee, you bump your elbow into the door, you have a near miss on the freeway, you know, you find somewhere safe and you stop and you go through these things. And you allow whatever wants to come up to come up. And so I have here number two, if you can't process the somatic experience in the moment, if you can't process the somatic experience in the moment, make a conscious note to do so when you have time and space. So I'll give two examples. I use the highway thing, right? I'm sure, I have no doubt, many of us have been driving on a road and there's a near miss or something happens and we can't stop. It's just not safe to pull over, right? In that case, this is where you might resource. This is where you might take a deep breath. So we'll get into that in page 2 and 3. But this is where you like, okay, I'm going to get home or I'm going to find an off ramp and I'm going to find a parking lot. I'm going to sit there. Maybe I get out, I walk, I breathe. And it's not that you relive what occurred, but you sense what happened and what would you have done if you could have. Maybe someone cut you off and you just want to do this to their neck, right? This comes into that anger and healthy aggression that we're going to get into. You know, maybe you need to stomp your feet on the ground. Maybe you need to let some tears out because you know that that just triggered something from when you were young, from a car accident or something like that, right? So that's one thing is in real time, even though you might need to wait for half an hour or an hour or later that night, you know, maybe it happened when you were in the car with your kids and it's best to not go totally off in your emotions when you're with little children because they will get scared. You wait till they're in bed, tucked in, and then you have some personal time to process what occurred in that day, right? This is also why we can work on past traumas. So if you were to work with, say, a somatic experiencing practitioner or someone who's trained well in this work, you might know, yeah, I had this thing that happened, this accident, this car accident, or this fall, or this whatever, and I know that I'm still trapped, I'm still frozen in that accident, right? And that's where you would use your memory. You're going to get into, when you get into biology of stress number 5, we're not there yet, but biology of stress number 5 talks about procedural memories, episodic memories and declarative memories and how we use the memories to help harvest and bring up these old somatic experiences that we may be trapped because A, we just didn't know, right? Because our culture just doesn't teach this typically, or B, there was just no time, or C, this kind of connects with the life-threatening piece. If we did have an accident where we were knocked unconscious and we end up in the hospital. This is very common. And you wake up and you don't remember anything, right? I'm sure there's some people here that's happened to you. While you don't remember, the body remembers. This goes back to Bessel van der Kolk's classic book, The Body Keeps the Score, right? But the thing is if you don't have the tools to dip into your interoception and understand all these things that you're learning in the biology of stress, this is where education comes in, you might not realize when you're in that yoga class, or even when you're doing work with me here, or you're doing something that's more slow and gentle, that weird movement that your arm keeps wanting to do is actually a protective response to protect your head from the steering wheel or something, right? And this is where, as you get educated and you learn to listen and really trust these somatic sensations, these strange movement behaviors, that's how we start to work on the past events. But from my experience, many of us don't have the tools yet. I certainly wouldn't have when I first started my work back in 2004 in the mind body. If I was asked to process old surgical traumas and accidents when I was falling and getting concussed and breaking bones and all this, I'd be like, what? What do you mean my interoception? I don't know what that is, right? I didn't have the vocabulary to listen to these deeper sensory pieces, let alone the emotional piece with it. So what one will find, and let's go to page two, as you become more efficient and proficient at listening to your internal sensations, you start to naturally take these balls out of your pool because you have the context, the theory, and you've built your foundations. You learn, you know, oh, my breath is starting to hold. Okay, I'm going to feel that tension and just sense it right now. Okay, let's keep going. We'll cover more of this. So this is, for example, so this is a continuation from page one. So I may have already mentioned some of these. So for example, do some nervous system health basics. So that's the first line there. Either organically or use the actual neurosensory exercises. So what this means, the health basics, just to review, it's orienting, connecting to the ground, noticing the breath, following the impulse, all these things. Right. So if you're trying to tap back into an old event, or you know you had a scare that earlier that day and you want to process that so those balls don't stick, go back to the basics or use the neurosensory exercises. Right. So push play on the orienting or do some potent posture. Or this week, the joints lesson can be a beautiful one to just get really quiet but very aware of the skeleton of the body, for example. When you get into the kidney adrenal lessons next week, those are beautiful ones because if you're not sure where to go, but you know you had a scare earlier that day, let's say, chances are those adrenals and those kidneys got contracted. And it might be that they're already, or still, I should say, contracted. And so even just this simpleness of going and noticing them can start to disengage the chronic stress response and the bracing pattern that you have had that whole day and perhaps your lifetime. This is the other thing, right? As we process these things in real time, we're also working with the pattern, the habit to stay braced, which eventually shifts. Next line down, seek out some support and social engagement. So this could be a person. It could be a pet. It could be listening to music. It could be watching your favorite movie. There's a reason why some of us like to go back to watch old familiar things. Does anybody do that? I do that sometimes, right? Some of the older sitcoms are great for that. You know, rewatching the silly sitcoms that just are silly life, right? So support and social engagement is very broad. Next line down, connect with nature. So this can be literal or visualization. Literal or visualization. Because for some of us, we might not have the rainforest at our backyard or a beach right in front of us, but we can visualize the stream, the mountains. Oddly, I don't know if this is intentional, but for those that have the device, I think it's Apple TV. Does anybody have Apple TV? When it's on, I don't know what you would call it, when it's on pause, when it's just not, when you're not using it, it flips to these scenes of nature. Has anybody seen that? Like there'll be the desert, there'll be the sky, there'll be water, there'll be dolphins going through the water. And we've programmed it because it used to be cityscapes too. And so Seth programmed it so it only has nature, and it has nature in the longest form possible so it doesn't shift. And I will say there are some nights where I just sit and I stare at that screen and I just feel, you'll see this beautiful nature. And for some of us, we don't have access to that. So that, screensaver, that was the word I was looking for. So oddly, there are ways, but you can also look on YouTube, and if you just type in nature sounds, there will be 10 hours of nature sounds, birds, ocean, that you can just listen to, right? So there's all these little ways that we can connect to nature through literal or visualization or using sound or images. Next line down, make use of resources. So I've already sort of said this, make use of resources, music, movement, spiritual practice, anything that grounds you, keeps you connected, keeps you tethered. One of the most important things when we are starting to move old balls out of our system, old survival stresses, is that we don't put ourselves into more survival stress. And that's where these next pieces come in, the four whens. We want to make sure that we're not popping into more freeze or popping into more activation and fight energy, right? There's a difference between releasing the fight energy and releasing the freeze versus going deeper in to the freeze or deeper in to the activation. All right, the four whens. Let me have a little liquid here. Maybe take a second to just reconnect to ensure you're still present with your body. Give your eyes a break from the screen if it hasn't yet done so. The four whens. So the first one here, when not to resource. So I'll first preface this by saying it's okay to resource. There's no problem with resourcing. If that's where your system needs to go, then by all means do it. And there comes a time in your nervous system health healing journey where you will have enough capacity to, as I like to sometimes say, ride the tsunami wave. Not that we would ever ride a tsunami wave in real life, but if one were to ride a tsunami wave, what would you need to do first? You'd first need to know how to swim. You'd first want to know how to do normal surfing, maybe bodyboard, surfing the waves with your body before you get on that surfboard and ride this massive tsunami wave. So that's just a visual to show the big, big boulders of our old stress responses. We don't want to pick them up at the beginning. We want to do the baby steps to get there. So when not to resource, first bullet, when to resource externally versus internally depends. Depends is the word there, on many factors. Many factors. This is why I can't say, when you feel this, do this. When this happens, do this movement. It doesn't work because your system will tell you what it needs once your capacity is built up more and once your regulation is starting to come on. You will know exactly what to do. Trust me, it will happen. So, next line down, as more capacity, that's the next word, is cultivated. In other words, that bigger pool, it's the next word. As more capacity is cultivated, bigger pool, and more containment, that's the next word. Containment, we covered what containment was last week, is on board. More exit paths. That's the next word. Exit paths and better biological embodiment. There's a lot of words on this one. Embodiment. The need for external, that's the final word of that long sentence. The need for external resources decreases. So I'll read that fully. As more capacity is cultivated, bigger pool, and more containment is on board, and there's more exit paths and better biological embodiment, the need for external resources decreases. There's like a song and dance with that, right? Bigger, more containment, more connection, less need for external. That's our goal. Next line, next bullet. We might consider not, that's the word, going to a resource when we're feeling a somatic experience. That's the next two words, bubbling up. We might not consider going to a resource when we are feeling a somatic experience bubbling up or already present. At this time, we might stick with what is being felt, stick with what is being felt somatically so we can assess it and integrate it. So I'll say that again. We might consider not going to a resource when you have a somatic experience bubbling up. We might want to stick with it, feel what is happening, feel what's being felt somatically so we can access it and integrate it. So that's a very long way of saying, oh, wow, this is just an example. I'm feeling a little nervous energy in my belly or in my chest. I think, and this is where you have to use your brain, I want to feel this. I'm not going to run and grab whatever it is I might use to shift out of this thing that I'm feeling. And so that's where, as you notice that heat, that energy, the buzzy energy, whatever it might be, you notice it, you sense it, it's like you're listening to it, and you might just stay a little bit touched into how you notice your butt on your chair or the ground under your feet. Your breath. You might notice your breath is getting a little held. And we'll get into the breath thing next page, but you might just notice the shallowness of the breath. And inevitably, what occurs is when we be with that somatic experience and we just contain it, acknowledge it with neutrality. I don't have that word, but maybe write that in bold yellow. Neutrality. When we just see it as neutral, not good or bad, it's just a sensation. That is the magic sauce. That's what allows it to express and move maybe into your body, out of your body, or maybe there's a feeling attached to that, or a movement attached to that, or a memory attached to that. We don't know. You won't know until you keep that neutrality and let it move through, let it integrate, etc. So this is when we might not go to a resource. And just as an example, someone asked, what's the difference between internal and external? External is all of the things out of us. The fuzzy blanket, the cup of tea, the music, the person, the plant, the pet, the nature, even our connection to whatever higher source we might connect to, that is external. Whereas internal, that is us sensing our interception. That's us just, in some ways, our internal resources comes aligned with trusting our interception. So we would be resourcing, in this example I just gave you, oddly to the crazy buzzy energy. So it's a resource when it's crazy buzzy, when we keep it neutral. But if we start to feel that panic, we want to call it that, or that tightening, and we go, oh no, what's happening? Where's my resources? I better get rid of this. What do I do? Where are the steps? It ain't a natural resource anymore. It becomes a you go into more survival stress. So this is this very fine line between being able to dance with these internal sensations and keep them neutral. For some of us, this may take some time to get to, and that is okay. That is okay, but it will happen. Our bodies are meant to sense these things with neutrality. Okay, but this doesn't mean, I'll just be very clear, this doesn't mean that we might not get angry or show tears or express emotion. I have said before, and I'll say again right now, to me, emotions are meant to be neutral. Just like an animal in the wild whom is defending is not thinking this is a negative emotion, my anger, right? They're not thinking that. Or when they're playing, yes, they're having fun, but they're not thinking, oh, I'm happy right now. It's just part of the spectrum of being a mammal, having all these emotions. But us humans, we have created such a mess with labeling things as good, bad, acceptable, not acceptable. And then that's where we get confused with our body and this natural medicine. So that's what I mean by them being neutral. It doesn't mean we might not feel heat or softness or fun or sadness, but we don't label it as such. Final bullet there. Final bullet. This is again in reference to when to not resource. And then there's another bullet on page 3. So we'll go through the next two. So, but first line, making the choice, making the choice to not dive into the felt sense and honoring, that's the next word, honoring our limits by using an external resource or internal resource is healing in itself. So one addition to this in a second. So again, making the choice to not dive into the felt sense and honoring our limits by using an external resource or internal resource is healing in itself. So here's one little discrepancy. You might go, but Irene, you just said internal resources is this. So again, this is where there's lots of additions to this. So when you start to learn, for example, the kidney adrenal lessons, or you'll learn the joints this week, for example, these are internal sensations you will feel because they're within you. You're noticing your kidneys, adrenals. Eventually you'll learn to listen to the layers of the body, the area around the heart, the diaphragms, the joints. So those are internal. Choosing to go to your kidney adrenals or your diaphragms or your joints or the layers of your body is still resourcing you away from the spontaneous somatic experience that might be coming up. But that's okay because you're making that conscious choice. This is too much right now. I am going to press play on kidney adrenals. While that is an external listening, you're guiding yourself inside to work with the kidney adrenals, for example, or to work with potent posture. The reason why potent posture is an important one, although sometimes people kind of negate it, is just learning how to balance upright, is if we're feeling a lot of sympathetic energy, a lot of dicey energy, spicy energy, sometimes better to stand up and to not sit there and get calm. And so that's why that lesson is in standing. It's to activate your big anti-gravity muscles, your spinal muscles, your leg muscles, your hip flexor muscles, your calf muscles, so that there's just a little matching of sympathetic energy. The lesson is also to help you find yourself in space, but it can also be a wonderful resource when you're sensing a little diciness that's a bit too much. Okay, page 3. This is continuing with when not to resource. So overriding our capacity Overriding our capacity creates more strain and survival stress and is counterproductive. So again, overriding our capacity will happen. And I will say this right now, if you do too much as you gain more capacity and then you find yourself smacked down needing to rest for a few days, that's normal, right? So overriding our capacity, that example would be you're gaining more capacity, you're being better at not letting more stressors into the body, you're connecting to the environment, you're processing things as they come up. So your swimming pool's getting bigger. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, I think I can go and like do all these things today. I've got this long list of things that need to get done. I'm going to do them all. And I'm going to be out for 7 hours today doing them. I know that's a bit extreme. That would be overriding capacity. You might be able to do it, but it is now going to shrink your pool because, again, not saying this can't happen, but chances are as you do all those things, you're having to push into a little survival energy. And you might stop connecting to the environment. You might not stop to orient. You might not notice that you're bracing as you try to get to that one more thing that you need to do on your list. So for those here who are maybe in the midst of living with and healing, say chronic fatigue, for example, this is where it might feel so hard to do less, even though you have more energy. I'm going to pause there. That's so important. It's like you've just laid the foundation. And if you've ever seen foundation laid, when you lay foundation, do you build the building right then and there? Uh-uh. It's got to settle. It's got to harden. Right? It has to create it just has to harden. You wouldn't want to put framing of a house into wet concrete. It wouldn't work. So that's the example, the metaphor. As you build your capacity, really honor it and let it solidify and let it solidify. And then you push a little bit, just a little bit, but you don't want to drop yourself back and shrink the pool. Bottom line, let yourself resource when you're not sure. So you don't want to be sitting there with a sensation that's intense. And if there's this back and forth conversation that you're having with yourself for more than 10 seconds, chances are, let yourself find a resource. Let yourself connect to something to help your system soothe a little bit. In other words, when you start to sense these balls being taken out of your pool, there should be very little thought process as to, is this good? Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe I should go make a cup of tea and then feel this. When those things are ready, it's like your system just knows it's happening. I have not given birth to a baby, at least in this lifetime. I've heard, however, from mothers, you just know when it's time. There's something that tells you, oh man, it's time, right? Like it's ready. And so that's the thing is you don't want to wait too long. You want to just honor and say, yeah, I'm going to resource. No shame in that. All right. Number two, when not to orient. I saw a comment on resourcing, so I'm going to answer that. It's not really a question, but someone said, so then lazy is being good. It depends. So it depends, because lazy can also be us keeping ourselves stuck in freeze, right? So there's this need for us when we're in this initial phase of learning how to grow regulation, where yes, we may need way more rest. This is that stage of neuroplastic healing that's called neurorelaxation, where, wow, it's like, I need to rest. I need to sleep. And it's because the system is It's kind of like newborn babies. They sleep a lot. It's not because they're lazy. It's because they are forming so many new pathways, right? They're needing so many calories. They're growing this crazy. Imagine if we just kept growing after we became full adults. Like, it doesn't happen. There's so much growth happening in those first, obviously, 3 years of life, but into our teenage years. Right. We need a lot of rest. We need a lot of sleep. But then there's this point where we need to sometimes, if our habit has been to be very slow and very inactive, where we might need to kick it up a notch and just push in a healthy way. Seth, and I talk about this in our conversations he and I have had about his healing, because he was a lazy one, right? He didn't want to move. He didn't want to exercise. That was his protective survival mechanism. I was the opposite. I had no trouble moving, no trouble exercising. And so now it's like we've shifted. So I'm having to just chill out more. Doesn't mean I'm not moving. And so this is where each person will have to find their sweet spot. And that sweet spot will change as you go forward. For the women here, your sweet spot is also going to be more tricky because we have a longer cycle, right? Our hormonal cycle is not just one day like the men. Our hormonal cycle goes usually 28 days. And so even our energy changes throughout each month. And this is where getting to know the rhythms of our body and when to push and not is more than just today is my exercise day, therefore I'm going to exercise. Sometimes it's like, actually, today's not going to be that day. Maybe tomorrow will be that day, right? Nuance. That's the key to this. All right. Number two, when not to orient. So this is so individual. Individual. And in many ways, orienting, we could say, could be a resource. But the reason it doesn't fall into the category of resources, external resource for me, is orienting is a natural biological act that we have built in us to do. Whether it's defensive orienting, looking for danger, or just exploratory orienting and just looking around, right? Again, to go back to the baby, the toddler. You'll catch them just looking. And often there's a joke, oh, look, she's spacing out, or oh, he's in another world. Maybe, but usually what I find when I see kids doing that is they're just taking in the environment. They're having their own pause, right? That is why that baby isn't going to say, Mama. Well, they would say, I want a bottle or I want to feed, but typically they're not saying, I want my warm, fuzzy blanket to calm me, right? And so orienting is like this more natural biological impulse. So orienting, next line down, can take us out of processing internal sensation. Just like resourcing can take us out of that. But that's okay. If our system needs to move out of the intensity that's too much, then by all means, orient. Bring your focus to the outside. Bring your focus to see something. Next line down. But this is in service to the line above, but it's better than disconnecting. It's better than disconnecting from ourselves. It's better than disconnecting from ourselves. You have to be the judge. Judge, you have to be your guide. You have to learn how to experiment, that's the word, experiment with what you can and cannot tolerate. One of the classic terms that Peter Levine, founder of Somatic Experiencing, kind of coined for his work is the word titration. That word is from chemistry. but it's just little drops. And so sometimes we might feel an intense sensation. And this is just how you would work with a good somatic experiencing practitioner, for example, is they might help guide, encourage the tiniest feeling of survival stress. Let's just touch into that little bit of memory from that accident. But then their job and your job as you work with this for yourselves is to pull yourself out of that little intense titration of survival energy so that you don't flood your system. You don't overdo it. You don't override and then pop into more survival stress. So it's kind of this strange thing. Working with survival stress, working with stored trauma, means you have to touch into the stored survival stress and feel it, but you want to feel it in a way that you're not overloading the system, more disconnection or more overwhelm. So you may touch in to that thing that's a bit intense, and then you go, okay, I'm out, right? And then when I was working with people in private, you might see this, and then you might literally, I might grab their leg and be like, come back. Like, come back, open your eyes, look at me, right? It can be that direct, because we will get sucked into that vortex sometimes, that trauma vortex. So that's very normal to have to pull yourself out. Number three, when not to take a deep breath. So you can see these are getting shorter as we go along because they're all very similar to orient or resourcing, I should say. So when not to take a deep breath. So same points for breath as for orienting. Same points for breath as for orienting. Sometimes we just need to take a deep breath. So if we're exercising, right? If we're moving, we're going to need more exchange of carbon dioxide and oxygen. Our metabolism increases. There's more waste product. We got to get it out and we got to get it in. Exchange. This week, during lab three, you'll be getting into cultivating the inhale and the exhale. These are breath lessons that are based on the Feldenkraisian principles, and also on the principles of feeling, and you'll notice this when you get into cultivate the exhale, the end point of breath, where there's maybe a pause and a waiting for the breath to come in. And one thing I've been looking at more and learning is why it's important for us to have that exhale and to be able to wait. And one of the better books that describes this, I'll reference it, is called Breath by James Nestor. It's got all sorts of stories and personal accounts. He's a journalist. He dives into all the breath work that's out there, from subtle to crazy holotropic breath work, which I do not recommend, and nor does he at the end of the book. But the main takeaway at the very end of that book, spoiler alert, is we want to breathe less. We breathe too much. And we want to get comfortable at having more carbon dioxide build up in our body. And in cultivating the exhale, that you'll breathe out and you'll wait, there will be that feeling of the body needing oxygen. And for those that maybe have what we would consider more anxiety symptoms, what you might find is when you feel that rise in carbon dioxide, you'll feel panicky. And that's okay. But what we're doing is we're training to feel that a little bit more. And then, of course, your body will then expel and breathe. It has to. Your brain won't let you not breathe. But what we have found, and what he really showcased in that book, was this ability for us to have more gentle exchange of oxygen and CO2. So to come back to the handout, sometimes we just need to take a deep breath because we're moving. we're exercising, and sometimes we just need more oxygen, extra oxygen. But also the flip side is more expulsion of that carbon dioxide. Now, the other thing about breath that's important, what happens when you have a shock? So I'll test you all. When you have a shock, a trauma, what happens to your breath? Leave a comment in the chat. Tell me what happens. What happens to your breath? It holds. What happens to the muscles around the lungs and the fascia? It tenses. So when you're starting to move through, thank you everyone, old survival energies. So let's say you're, I'll use my example again. I'm processing that thing that happened that didn't happen, but hypothetically I fall down the stairs. It's a shock. basically you protect your brain, everything you can to protect your head. The body will try to protect your head. There's a holding. So let's say I'm now working with my somatic practitioner and I know I still have some fear around going down the steps. I'm still stuck in that bracing pattern. In order to move through and out of that event, would you want me to experience deep breathing or feeling the breath get really shallow and really held? What do you think? You got 50-50. Number two, I saw the two. Yeah, you want to actually bring the system to that moment of near, holy shit, near death, where the breath is going super slow, it's getting really shallow, it's going into that freeze response. And so I can say, in working with clients over all of the years, there are more times where I would say to someone, stop deep breathing. I just want you to go shallow, because people will start to do this. They'll start to go, and as soon as someone does that, I know they're trying to resource and not feel the survival stress. So I actually will say, let that CO2, I won't say CO2, but I'll say, just maybe pause that long exhale, just wait and wait and wait. And then what often occurs is this, and I can't mimic it because I can't mimic this physiology, but it'll be this. And then that's the reset. And then often what comes out of that, tears. That's where the tremor might come, because you're letting go of that shock. Okay. So again, I'm not saying do all this practice to stop breathing. And this is where the breath techniques can get dicey and why I don't recommend extreme breathing techniques. Because if the system can't monitor that, a person can pass out. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that if we're in a pool. We don't want to do that if we're near a body of water, where we're somewhere where we could fall, hit our head. Very, very dangerous. So that's why, you know, someone asked about certain breathwork techniques. You have to do them with awareness on board and safety on board and know what you're playing with. Because some of these breath practices can disrupt the acid-base balance of your blood, and that's what can make us pass out. So if anything, just be gentle with your breath and notice if you have a tendency to keep as a way to calm. And what might it be like to just notice your breath and feel the breath? And if there's a little bit of a freezy response, like, oh, my breath is going really slow, eventually the breath will fill up. But this is also why it's not enough to just breathe. We'll get into deeper into the labs, working with the layers and the diaphragms, because if the diaphragms and the layers are still braced, you can try to breathe those lungs as much as you want and it ain't going nowhere, right? The tissue is still holding. So again, breathwork has a time and a place, but it's not the only thing. We need to also work with these patterns of survival stress and the other layers of the body. Okay. Four, what you should do, or when you are not sure what to do. So this is the fourth one. When you are not sure what to do, In many ways, we've already covered all of these. So there's a page and a half, full page. Page four is the final page with this. But bottom of page three, when you are not sure what to do, do not worry. Those are the first three words. So go back to the basics. The key is we don't want to add more survival stress in. If you do worry, that's where you have a talk with yourself and you go, wow, I just worried about not knowing what to do. Interesting, right? So just feel how you can start to shape shift out of that worry tension that so many of us carry. Plus, remember, learning, that's the next word, learning a second language. I've got that in quotes because this is the language of nervous system regulation. Learning a second language takes practice and time. We're not going to get fluent in a second language as an adult in 3 weeks or even 3 months or even 6 months or even a year unless we are so immersed. And even then, we're not going to get all of the slang and all of the things that come with languages, right? All of the nuances. So just remember, it takes time and practice. As more, next line down, as more neurosensory skills come into your repertoire, I'm not speaking well today. As more neurosensory skills come into your repertoire, into your awareness, all the lessons within the labs, this is the final word, final line, all the lessons within the labs coupled with the theory, these are the ABCs and 1, 2, 3s. Next page. This is a run-on sentence. We start to string together the words. We start to string together the words of internal somatic awareness. With practice, we begin to naturally, that's the word, move our internal system without conscious thought. This means we are becoming more fluent, that's the next word, fluent in the language of our somatic experience. We are getting more comfortable with it. We are growing nervous system capacity. For fun, everyone do that. Capacity. We just want capacity. Big, juicy, healthy capacity. So in other words, just like a language, when you're learning a language, it's choppy. It's messy. Just like a new kiddo is learning how to speak. It doesn't come out right. They're learning things. But we know a child learns a language before they go to school, before they start to read. Typically, they hear it, they see it, they see the mouth, they see the facial expressions, they start to learn it. It just happens because they hear it. It's in us to learn language, just like regulation. So for those of us, again, who are very new here and you know, yep, I don't got regulation. I know I have dysregulation because of these things. All good. That's why we're here. This is where we have to be patient because eventually the system wants to have this internal processing without your conscious awareness. But at the beginning, it has to be conscious. In a perfect scenario where we raise a little human with attunement and attachment, and mom is regulated, it's happening there. It's happening through the process by which it's naturally designed. And so as adults, we're learning this in a reverse engineering kind of way by learning these ABCs and 1, 2, 3s of our somatic system and our connection to the environment. So next line down, this means we are getting better at attuning to ourselves. That's such an important word, attuning. That's the word we want to use when we talk about good parenting practices. For example, attunement to the kid, attunement to the baby. What do they need? Oh, they need this. Huh. And it becomes natural. You just know exactly what that baby needs based on the way they look, the way they sound, the way they move. You will get that with yourself as you keep working with this. So this means we're getting better at attuning to ourselves, not to mention knowing what we need and when. That is again why following our biological impulse to, you know, when we're thirsty, when you're hungry, when you're not hungry, when you're tired, when you need to go to the bathroom, all these things are reteaching us the things that maybe we didn't get from our parents because they didn't know how to attune to us. So again, don't underestimate that as well, this following of our biological impulses. That is attunement to us. For many of us, next line down, for many of us, this process of better attuning to ourselves becomes more fluent in our somatic experience, and being with it with awareness is new territory. That's the two words, new territory. Again, similar to how a newborn baby is constantly having new experiences. And this goes back to do not underestimate the simplicity of the lessons. And if you fall asleep, has anybody fallen asleep while they've been doing the lessons? They just, or you need a nap afterwards. That's real. That's not some artifact of you doing it wrong. Sometimes it might because your system's going into a little bit of freeze, but you'll know the difference because when you wake up, you feel refreshed versus you feel more groggy, right? And so if you're not sure, that's where ask our moderators in the general question. When you get into some of these lessons, you just might find that you need to nap afterwards. And that's because you've just formed all these new connections with your body. I can't stress that enough, the need to let that foundation settle. All right, second to last bullet point. This is how building capacity creates nervous system regulation. This is how building, that's the word, capacity creates nervous system regulation in an adult. Whereas for an infant, that's the final word of the sheet. Whereas for an infant, their self-regulation is created via co-regulation with another human as a result of that attunement. So anyone here, I'm sure we have some folk here that have newborn babies or little ones, or you're about to. You're so lucky. It's so great that you can now raise your little one with this information and you are getting it online yourself, because when it's online in your own body, it just naturally comes out. For all of us who had kids and we know we didn't do that right, yep, that sucks. And you'll have to feel that and process that. And maybe you talk to your kids and this is just part of life. We're now learning new skills. But as you, as that parent, start to regulate, that will help your kids, even if they're adults. It's true. True story. So just know that, again, the way we're working with healing trauma and building regulation is literally from this ground up. We're reverse engineering what should have happened, but probably or maybe didn't when we were young. It's very different than other forms of trying to get the trauma out, trying to release the trauma. And from my experience, and the alum here, I think could attest to that, as we build this capacity, this is how these things start to heal, because it's built in us to heal these things and to find that self-regulation. So thank you, everyone. That's it for today. The four whens, practice them. Use your skills, use your tools. For the newbies here, stay with the basics, keep learning, keep doing the ABCs and 1, 2, 3s for the alumni. Keep your beginner's mind set on and dive into the lessons as you choose. Thank you, Leah, so much for being here and being on the chat with everyone. And Have fun with the lessons this week. Joints, lessons on breath. Have fun with them. All right, everybody.